Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
U.S. military budget on a yearly basis almost equals every other country's yearly budget for military combined. We're going to aspire to the things we want to see happen on Wall Street. We will need a president who will start talking about dismantling the U.S. military empire.
That was not Ron Paul on Laughing Gas. The voice you just heard was a member of the so-called Occupy Iowa Caucus movement. Question, why are these people not being arrested by Department of Homeland Security or the FBI since they are interfering with an election? Welcome to the Savage Nation. We are living in strange times indeed when a group of communist, radical vermin can block a port and none of the federal agencies will do a thing about it. They can interfere with an election, and our useless Department of Homeland Security continues to frisk women over 90, but we'll do nothing about vermin who are blocking an election, at least the caucus of an election. If you've listened to the show yesterday, you know what I think is going on. Headline, Savage says, Paul Gingrich destroying Republican brand, contends they're ruining chance of only GOP candidate who could beat Obama. World Net Daily apparently listens to the Savage Nation. They're one of the 8 to 10 million people who do. I will read their article. Presidential candidates Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich are destroying an already weakened Republican brand, increasing Obama's chance of being reelected next fall, says nationally syndicated talk show's Michael Savage. Romney is so silent, Gingrich is so dirty, and Ron Paul is so crazy that Obama is surging, Savage told his Savage Nation audience last night. Savage believes Mitt Romney is the only candidate in the GOP field capable of beating Obama, although acknowledges that most conservatives don't find the former Mass governor appealing. Of course Romney is a liberal Republican. Of course he is in the tradition of middle-of-the-roaders. Of course Romney is a milquetoast. And of course we would like someone more conservative, Savage said. However, I'm a pragmatist. Romney might be electable, although I'm not sure after Gingrich has gotten through with him, while Paul is unelectable and Gingrich is so soiled with dirt that he is contemptible beyond being unelectable. Savage said Gingrich has so much baggage and is so old that his suitcase doesn't even have wheels on it. Gingrich even looks like the prototypical corrupt politician, Savage said. If you were Steven Spielberg casting for the image of a Beltway bandit, corrupt insider politician, you couldn't do better than Newt Gingrich, he said. I have never seen anyone who is as piggish both in appearance and behavior as Newt Gingrich on the political stage, Savage said. Turning to Paul, I know many of you love Ron Paul. Many of you are accusing me of being in league with the bankers. If you know of a good banker, let me know who they are. The minute you turn on Paul right away, you're in with the bankers. If you know of a banker paying more than 0.1% interest, let me know who it is. I certainly would like to be in with the banker. Turning to Paul, Savage said the Texas congressman, known for his isolationist libertarian views, is another gift to the Democratic Party. If Obama's team wanted to invent someone else on the other side to make Obama look mild and moderate and safe, they couldn't have done better than inventing Ron Paul, he said. I'll pause right there. You can read it yourself on my site or on WND. And, of course, right away the lunatics are saying I'm owned by the bankers. Others are saying Ron Paul is the only candidate who consistently polls as them beat Obama. Nonsense. You people have not only drunk the Kool-Aid, you've eaten the Jimson weed. You've eaten the Texas Jimson weed if you think this lunatic is electable. Crazy, absolutely crazy. Now, of course, you can agree with Ron Paul on everything. Then you can be a pragmatist and say he's unelectable. But if you think he can be elected, then you're crazier than he is. He's not electable. Open your eyes. He is an idiot. He has no concept of foreign policy. He makes Obama look rational and meaningful. Now, if you'd like to talk about this, I don't know whether I want to eat my heart out over it and listen to all of the, you know, Paulites. The man is clueless on foreign policy. If he gets the nomination, the fact of the matter is it's the end of the Republican Party for 100 years. It would be the equivalent of Bill Ayers winning the a caucus and running on the Democrat ticket. That's more or less the balancing act. They're bookends. In other words, if Ron Paul was nominated by the Republican Party, the only equivalent on the Democrat side would be Bill Ayers. A Bill Ayers election would doom the Democrats for 100 years. Same thing here, but I don't know how to explain it to you. You know, we're approaching New Year's Eve, and many people, their minds are on that. We can talk about some other things. I don't want to scare you with all of this stuff. You want me to read from my novel, or you want to call me about... No, you're tired of it already? I'm not going to read from the novel unless you want me to. Look at all of these articles about me. My God, on WorldNet Daily. Michael Savage says Dems unqualified at any speed. Obama fiddles while world burns. Oh, these are the old articles about Savage. Well, there's a lot of good stuff out there, truthfully. But I know what you want to hear. You want to hear more of the Ron Paul stuff. So more of the Ron Paul stuff it will be on the Savage Nation because it gets better. I mean, it's the gift that keeps on giving to the Democrats. And the reason I'm playing it is so that you understand the damage he will do to this, to the chances of a conservative ever winning or a Republican. Because the more the American people... Thank God Ron Paul is being heard during Christmas week rather than during an actual week when people are semi-conscious, you know? Because we don't want him heard. We want him gone. We want him to go back to his exercycle. We want him on the exercycle with the spindly arms and the white undershirt. Then he can get a job maybe lobbying for China like... Look how good Bob Dole did after they put him on an exercycle with the spindly arms and the white shirt. Bob Dole, I mean Bull, war hero Bob Dole went to work for China as a lobbyist. Can you believe the country we're living in? It'd be like waking up and hearing Patton really didn't die in World War II. He went to work for Germany. He took a job lobbying for Germany anymore. You know what song I really want to hear? There's no England anymore. I'm dragging. I drank too much wine last night after the show. I got so worked up. I opened a bottle of... I went home, and I opened a bottle of Gaia. Siri Solorenzo. Yeah, great wine. Unbelievable. I slept like a baby. I fell asleep and woke up at dawn, 7 a.m. here in Florida. Beautiful, beautiful. I'll do the same again tonight because the stress is overwhelming dealing with these lunatics in the political world. Why do we get the second and third rate people running for office? Why is this? What has happened in our country that the first rate people will not go anywhere near politics, by and large? A small percentage will, but by and large, you've got second and third tier individuals in the political system. They're not the best. The best and the brightest are not in politics. You know that. The best and the brightest are in the Occupy movement. I mean, that's the real leading cutting edge of America. Just listen to the speakers. Take a look at them. They want to close down the U.S. military, close down Wall Street. They want everyone to have health insurance, free education, free medication. Now, that's your idea of that's a first-rate person. New Hampshire, Evan, we have a Paulite. We have a Paul bot on the Savage Nation calling. So we'll go to Evan, who loves Ron Paul. You're on the air, Evan. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to talk to you and maybe clarify some of your, misstatements about Ron Paul. I was like you last time around. I thought he was a nut. I've come to realize that he's probably the perfect guy for the job. Maybe a little old, but the perfect guy for the job.
Wait, the perfect guy for what job? To destroy America and Israel, or which job?
Well, no, the president of the United States. I understand where you're coming from on Israel.
Let's put Israel aside. Israel's important, but not the only important issue. The fact of the matter is, it is the canary, the bird in the canary in the mineshaft, excuse me, for the West. Because the way they treat the Israelis is the way Muslims would like to treat us. But let's put that Israel aside. the man's policies are not good for America on any other issue.
Well, let's talk about drugs. You brought that up last night.
Oh, I knew it. So you're stoned already? That's why you're calling a pot again.
No, not at all, Dr. Savage. I don't do drugs. That's not my thing.
Look, I know that there are many people who want drugs legalized because it would cut down on the number of people in prison and cut down on the number of police. And that's a good thing. That's a good goal. I don't believe there should be over a million people in our prisons, many of whom are in there because of minor drug charges. I totally agree with you on that. However, I warn you that the ending of prohibition of marijuana will only make more young people think it's safe, and you will addict another generation of people to one of the most dangerous drugs God has ever created.
I agree with you on the drug issue, all right? I'm not a proponent of drug usage at all. What I'm trying to say is neither is Ron Paul. His stance is the federal government has no right to make drugs illegal. It's a state issue. He's all for shrinking the federal government. And I'm not a pothead. I'm not promoting.
All right, well, look, we're all for shrinking the federal government. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I have a whole chapter on shrinking the federal government, and a plan on how to do it. He's not alone on that. And just because he's nuts doesn't mean he's wrong about everything. Of course he's right, but that's a catch-all phrase. Anyone could say that for the tooth fairy. We all want the federal government to get smaller, not bigger. But that does not make for a whole candidate, does it?
No, and I read your books. I'm on the same par as you, I think, politically. I'm a conservative independent.
All right, well, then, Evan, let's do this. Instead of getting angry at each other and me trying to be a wise guy, you and I both know that if Paul got the nomination, he couldn't win against Obama. It's impossible.
Well, that I'm not sure about. And I'll agree with you. If Romney wins the nomination, he'll win swing states. He'll probably win Florida, probably win Ohio, probably
win. But what you're forgetting are the millions upon millions of illiterate morons in America who vote. They have no education. They haven't the slightest idea who a president is or what a president should be. They're voting for a movie candidate. These are people who are living lives based on what the media shows them about sluts and degenerates in Hollywood. They have no idea. Well, they're going to look at a good-looking young black guy versus an old spindly white man. Tell me who they're going to vote for.
They're going to vote for, well, a lot of those types of people this time around would vote for Ron Paul. Obama.
Oh, yeah, they're going to choose a spindly old white cracker, sure.
Well, because they're going to think he's for legalizing drugs, and he's not. He's going to get some of that fringe group. The college kids have given up on Obama this time around.
Who has?
The college kids. He's not getting
the excitement. Well, the college kids. We don't know what they've done. You know, one poll means nothing. You know, I think we're talking in the air. You know, we're intelligent people. We can disagree on this. My position is that Ron Paul has destroyed the Republican brand already, not fatally yet, but it's close to being fatal. The more the Democrats get sound bites of this nut and associate him with Republicans in general, the less likely they're going to ever get any of the swing voters to ever walk across that aisle and vote for an R. That's my point. Let's put all of the other rhetoric aside. This guy has made so many statements that have damned him and will damn the Republican Party that the faster he is pushed away from the picture, the better it will be for the chances that we have to get any semblance of a conservative elected. 1-800-449-8255. Andy in Fort Myers, Florida, fire away. You're next up on the Savage Nation.
I wanted to comment on the resurrection and shameless promotion by Fox News of Newt Gingrich.
Yeah. What is that all about? Why is Murdoch running so many positives about this Trojan horse, Newt Gingrich? He's not the only one. Newsmax is as well. Now, I consider Chris Ruddy a colleague of mine, and I like Chris. I have no idea why these people are in bed with this man who is so tainted.
It's sickening. I mean, Roger Ailes made him a Fox News contributor. It's all Gingrich all the time. They might as well call it the Gingrich channel.
Why is that? Why do you think Murdoch wants this Trojan horse to take the nomination instead of Romney? You want the answer?
Go ahead.
I'm the only one who can throw this curveball because it's going to come right down the middle. I'll tell you exactly why. A guy like Murdoch wants Gingrich to steal it from Romney. I'll be right back to tell you and millions of others.
Savage.
Okay, before we were interrupted by the most important commercial breaks, and they're very important, without my sponsors, there'd be no show. But before the break, a caller was perplexed as to why Fox News is running around-the-clock support for Newt Gingrich. And I said, do you want to know why Fox is pushing Gingrich instead of Romney? And he said, sure. And I said, I'll tell you after the break. So here it is. First of all, when you say Fox News, you have to think Rupert Murdoch, not Roger Ailes. That's number one. Rupert Murdoch is the boss. Murdoch is in very deep trouble right now with the British government for electronic eavesdropping. And there's a similar case against him pending here in the United States by the Obama administration, meaning Eric Holder's Justice Department. And so far as I can put things together here, they've got him in a bind. And they've let Murdoch know in no uncertain terms what it is he has to do to get off the hook. You like that? That's my opinion. I don't know these people. They would have nothing to do with me. I'm nothing to them. They won't have me on the show, so any of their Fox News shows, for obvious reason, because they can't predict what I'm liable to say. But here, I just said what I think is going on. I think Murdoch is in a bind with the U.S. Justice Department over eavesdropping here, or something to that effect, and or he wants to expand his empire and buy more stations or more newspapers in the same market, or God knows what else he's looking for. And the Obama people have said, well, here's the deal. You push Gingrich instead of Romney, and we'll see what we can do for you after it's all over. I think that's the way the game is played, and it would be my guess. That's my guess, period, end of story. Why? Why do I guess that? Why? I just guess it. That's my suspicion. It's my suspicion. I'm not laying blame on anybody. I'm not saying anyone's good or bad. I'm telling you why a network. Look, it's a business. Don't you understand that it's not the truth? A news show is not the truth. It's only a television show. They can do what the hell they want, if the heck they want. They can do anything they want with it. It's their business. It's like a newspaper.
Savage.
Okay, welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, many of you, let me explain something. Most talk show hosts are off this week. Everything's either a replay or a fill-in. They're assuming that the audience is minuscule. But I've had reports from individuals in the internet business that the number of hits they're getting on their sites are higher than ever this week. And there's a reason for it. And the reason is that many of you are on vacation. It is true. That doesn't mean your mind has been put to sleep. Maybe you're somewhere, but you're bored. Maybe you're somewhere and you're anxious. Maybe you're somewhere and you're perplexed. Maybe you're somewhere and you can't believe what's going on in your country, and you're searching and you're searching. So you're going on the internet, you're tuning into talk radio, and you're lucky you landed on the station you're listening to me on. I'm Michael Savage. This is the third largest radio show in the United States of America and the second largest show in internet radio in the country. And I've been on since 1994, established in 1994. It's like a restaurant. I was in a restaurant the other night, and they told me in L.A. now, there's a fellow who owns a restaurant. He said, in business since 1981. Like, that's, you know, historic. It's like in England, in business since 1801. There's no history in America, none whatsoever. So tonight I'm talking about the damage that's been done to the Republican Party by the Beltway Bandit and by the lunatic. And of course, look, Romney to me is a Rockefeller type Republican, far too milquetoastish for me, too middle of the road, doesn't really stand for anything. We know about a Romney care is just like Obamacare. We understand all of this. We know he's not going to do a darn thing about illegal aliens, so far as I can tell. So you say, well, why then back him? Two reasons. Because he has a chance of beating Obama, while none of the other candidates can in a general electric. That's number one, general election, number one. Number two, I would sleep better at night knowing he's the commander in chief. I just don't think he would be as complicit with the Islamists as Obama is, or let's say looking the other way, or as sympathetic. I don't know how exactly to put it. I don't trust Obama when it comes to the Islamic radicals. Let's put it to you that way. I don't like Obama's catering to Islamic radicals around the world. I don't like him inviting them to the White House. I don't like how many of them have penetrated our intelligence services because of affirmative action. And I don't think that this would go on under Romney. Let's start with national security alone. That's number one. Number two, taxes. I think Romney would be far less likely to raise taxes than Obama in a second term. I could almost guarantee that. Number three, just again thinking out loud on at least one other issue, I'm pretty sure that Romney would be a fine choice. I've given you two now: national security, Islamism. Number two, taxation. Number three, on family values, there's no question in my mind that the inroads of the pervert left would go on to a break. They'd be break. It would stop because Romney is a straight up good Christian. I know many of you don't believe Mormons are Christians, but that's really a mark of your bigotry rather than anything else. It's shocking to me to hear how Christians can say that about Mormons. I for one, find it offensive to say that about a man's religion, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And it's strange to me how the media, how vile they are to begin with, who had nothing to say about Obama's fathers both being Muslim, nothing. They let it go by like it was nothing. This is the first time in American history that we had a president whose father was a Muslim, and then his second father, the adopted father, was a Muslim, and they said nothing. But when it came to Romney, suddenly his Mormonism became a big story a year ago. Remember rats like Wolf Blitzer, what they were doing? That fraudulent SOB, that faker. Who does he think he's faking with that little sheepish look? That little... So, you know, I don't want to get angry because it's not going to do me any good. I don't need to get angry at them because that's the way they are. We know who they are. They're rats in sheep's clothing. Other than that, let's talk about anything you'd like. It's Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. A new poll indicates Romney would beat Obama, 45-39. Apparently, that's a new poll. I believe it shows he's the only electable Republican, or it's a fake poll. Who knows? Ron Paul, meanwhile, has told his followers to shave their beards and cover up their tattoos. He's also been careful not to alienate the new Occupy movement. Can you believe this? Now, 2 years ago, Ron Paul went on Iranian state TV and compared the Gaza Strip to a concentration camp. And if you think I'm making this up, listen to clip five. This is Ron Paul, January 5th, 2009.
It's our money and our weapons. But I think we encouraged it. Certainly the president has said nothing to diminish it. Matter of fact, he justifies it on moral grounds at all. They have a right to this without ever mentioning the tragedy of Gaza. You know, the real problems are there. To me, I look at it like a concentration camp and people are making homemade bombs and like they're the aggressors.
Okay, so the lunatic Ron Paul is now in camp with Hezbollah, Hamas, and all the Jew haters of the world. So I rest my case. I just rest my case. The fact of the matter is, the man is so wrong on so many different levels, it's not worth even arguing with him. 1-800-449-8255. Texas, Andy, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Well, I agree with you 100% on Ron Paul. I live in Austin, and it's Ron Paul Central. But what worries me more is who would he choose as a running mate? Because you are judged by the company you keep, and look at the company he keeps.
Wait. You know, you just said something I wasn't aware of. He is a congressman from the Austin, Texas area?
Yes, that area. Well, no, he's actually from East Texas, which is worse. But Austin supports him.
Well, Austin is Berkeley South. Austin is the Berkeley of Texas.
Oh, very much so.
So you're telling me he's from a district even more liberal than Austin?
No, more, for lack of a better term, redneck, racist, East Texas.
More rednecky. Well, how does that fit with his hatred for Israel?
Well, if you look at some of his supporters, one of them is on the radio here in Austin and has an internet show. He's always against the banks, always against, and if you look at the people he cites and you look up their lineage, it always goes back to being Jewish. I've done
you mean everybody evil is Jewish to that person?
Yes, very much.
Yeah, no, there are people with that obsession. I understand. They have obsessions. It's pure racism. I understand that.
Yeah, but Austin being a bastion of liberalism, as you put it, and I'm here because of the high tech. Don't let me in with association.
Well, I'm in San Francisco because of the fog, not because of Nancy Pelosi's values.
Yeah, but my mother always taught me, much like your family, my upbringing was very much like yours. That's why I like listening to you. You're judged by the company you keep. And so his supporters are these people who are saying, you know, the government's bad. It needs to be replaced. We need a revolution. We're not going to promote violence unless we get pushed. And it's always...
Well, there's an awful lot of people who think that's true, especially since we have a regime that seems to be against the people. I mean, let's not forget that the administration under Obama seems to take the side of illegal aliens and the enemies of America on almost at almost every choice. I'll give you an example. Today, the Department of Homeland Security set up an 800 number for illegal aliens who were jailed, taking the side as though that they're the victim. Now, this is enough to make anyone's head spin. Which side are they on?
Just say one thing about the Occupy group in Austin, that is, you always talk to them about fair weather. We've had some cold mornings here in Austin. Yesterday when I drove by, there were three of them. Two very short ones that looked like they hadn't bathed in a month, and one who was very tall and skinny with blonde Rastafarian hair, and it looked like three Disney characters.
Well, that's it. It's the refuse of society is in the Occupy movement. It's the flotsam and jetsam of our society. They are of no value whatsoever. By dint of their behavior, they are the outcasts for good reason. They're worthless. No one should be listening to them whatsoever. By the lack of productivity in our society, they have forfeited the right to be listened to. What have they given this society other than hot air and anger? Answer, nothing. They hate everything productive. They hate all productive citizens. They're jealous of anybody who rides by in a decent car. They're jealous of a human being who is dressed and clean with a wife and two children. They're jealous and hateful of anybody in a nice house. They are not dangerous. They're refuse. However, when they start blocking an election or a caucus, they're interfering with the election, the electoral process, and they've crossed a federal line, and that's where I say Janet Napolitano is failing us by not arresting them. She has an obligation to protect her homeland security. In Oakland, California, these rats interfered with interstate commerce, and not one federal agency stepped on them for this. You know that, don't you?
Oh, yes. But I have one question to ask you, Dr. Savage, if I may, and then I'm going to hang up. In Austin, because of the liberalism, those people, because they don't work, and don't contribute anything, get to go down to the local elections and voice their opinions and get what they want, while the 85% of us that work for a living and support their what they want can't take the time off to do. What are we supposed to do? I mean,
it's always the old thing about the squeaky wheel and all of that, you know, gets the oil and all that. We know, they know how it works. The communists left, but make no mistake about it, they're not a spontaneous movement. They were funded by George Soros. They were organized by a group out of Vancouver, Canada. This is a very serious issue. This is the equivalent of a foreign invasion. The Occupy movement is a foreign invasion, and it should be stopped by the federal government. The fact of the matter is we know this. We've studied it. But we predicted that when the cold weather arrived, they would go home to mommy with the sniffles. So thank God most of them have gone home. However, they're arriving in Iowa to interrupt the caucuses, and I believe that the federal government has an obligation to arrest them, not because they are simply expressing their opinion, but because they're attempting to interfere with the electoral process. It's a federal offense, and they should be stopped. Now, the reason that they won't be stopped is because Obama owns the Occupy movement. He supported it from the beginning. As did Hillary Clinton, as did Nancy Pelosi. They own it. And if the Republicans had a brain, they'd be running all the tapes of Obama, Pelosi, Clinton, and all the others supporting the Occupy movement right up to the election. The people understand who they are, okay? Thank you for the call. Do you want me to talk about these things, or is it too much for a Thursday night? Now I'm going to hear about Rick Santorum. You must be joking. I don't understand the news media. The man has about as much chance of winning this as my dog Teddy does. But okay, they're running it again. Anybody but Romney. That's Fox News. Room for Rick Santorum surges. Then you go to the bottom of the Fox News page and it shows a picture of the worst newscaster in American history. The worst in American history. And they say, would you like his picture as wallpaper? what's, I don't know his name, Babel. Who was I mentioning? Shep Smith. It says, if you, Shep Smith, you could have wallpaper for your computer. I said, is, I thought he was wallpaper. Look at this. Russia's in trouble. So he's gone on to Fox News. He stepped off the throne. Look at that. He's reaching out. His ratings went from a 2.5 or a 3.5 in most markets to a 0.5. So even he's stepping out of the Gulf Stream to go on Greta Van. He's going on Scarface. Good for her. That should be a big draw. Greta Van Susteren, Scarface on Fox News, has Rush Limbaugh, the Republican water boy, on her program. I have nothing against Rush. Don't get me wrong. He's a wonderful, terrific golfer, and that alone should justify his whatever. You want me to start bashing people now? How about O'Reilly? You want me to work on O'Reilly, Hannity, Limbaugh? Who would you like tonight? Let's see what mood I'm in. No, I'm not going to attack my. They're my colleagues. They're such wonderful people. They care only about the movement. They're real conservatives. They care only about America and the movement. They don't care about their own pocketbook. Not at all. Look, it's a very interesting world. Everyone's out for themselves. That's number one. We live in a capitalist society. The first thing that will help you understand everything is that everyone is out for themselves. The minute you understand that, everything falls in place. Nobody is for anybody. Everybody's for themselves. And the only time they're for somebody else is if that somebody else is for them and advances them in some way. Now, once you get those two issues down clear in your head, the rest starts to fall in place. Everything falls in place for you. So you may as well be alone. That's all. You may as well be for yourself only. Because if you're only for yourself, you know who you can trust. You're not going to stab yourself in the back unless you're crazy. Look what's in the news. Nothing to covering it up. Why is Haggard swapping wife? Look at what's on Fox News. Pup plucked from icy river. This is Murdoch's. Oh, let's go to another website. I'm sick of that one already. New York Post. I stopped watching. I don't go to the New York Post website much anymore because they couldn't stop with the woman with the big behind, the large last name, and the overly large lips. Every day, I couldn't take it anymore. I stopped going. I wouldn't go on it. I wouldn't. Let me go to my hometown website, the worst website in America. The San Francisco website. Here's their headline story. Biggest restaurant closures. See, the city of San Francisco is so useless in terms of thought. They produce nothing of any value in the area of thought. They produce a lot of technology, but not in terms of intellectual thought. I am the leading intellectual in the city of San Francisco. In fact, my novel, Abuse of Power, is probably the best novel written about San Francisco Bay since Jack London. I think it's better than Jack London's novels in many ways. That's what I think about it. Here's another lead story in the sexiest men ever in film. You hear? This is all they care about. Tight dungarees and Blackberries and iPhones stuck in the back pocket. What else? Contemporary menus. Every other day it's a menu. What else is in this? San Francisco cyclist-friendly rest spots. Yeah, okay, get me started on cyclists in San Francisco who are killing people. They're knocking them off like fleas. What would you like me to talk about? Is it break time yet? No? I don't even know what it is? I've gone through a stop set? I didn't. I started talking about... Look, if you'd like me to change the show to something else or talk about these important topics, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We have wonderful sound for you on hold. We have former aide to Ron Paul, Eric Dondero, on Paul's Ranting and Raving. Play 14 so they know what we're talking about with Ron Paul. Just 14.
He was ranting and raving. I mean, he honestly believed that this was that Muhammad Atta had nothing to do with this, or was at least a pawn of the CIA.
You hear Ron Paul says that Muhammad Atta of 9/11 fame, or infame, was a pawn of the CIA. Now, if you want to believe that, and you want to believe that this man is presidential material, it just shows you why the Republican brand is finished. All right, I'm going to take a break.
Savage.
It is. All right, Chad in San Antonio, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to know, do you have a personal goal this coming year? Just something you want to accomplish, something you got on your mind?
Yeah, well, I have some professional goals. One is to have my name cleared from the group of terrorists in England. I intend to have that done. That's number one. Number two, I want to help some of the Coptic Christians who are coming here on asylum because the Muslims are killing them in Egypt as a result of the money spent. I don't want to go down the trail of tears. The liberals who destroyed Egypt can't believe that what's going on to the Christian community. I want to help them if I can. Personally, what I want to do, I don't want to look like Chaz Bono. That's number one, so I may work a little bit on exercise. So I get rid of the Chaz look. Fourth, I'm taking up watercolor painting. I intend to become proficient within a year.
Well, I think you're the only person covering the whole Coptic Christian disaster in Egypt, so thank you for looking out for those.
Absolutely. I made that commitment the other day. I'm not going to drop it. It was not just, hot air. I told you 2012 when I get my things in order, I'm going to try to raise money for one of the churches taking in Coptic Christians who are fleeing the Muslim slaughterers in Egypt. They are burning churches. They're killing Christians. They're trying to perform... I don't even want to use the words, what they're trying to do to the Christian girls in Egypt. But you can pretty much imagine mutilate them sexually because of Sharia law. You have a nightmare, a human rights nightmare. Ethnic cleansing is going on in Egypt right now as a result of the revolution called the Arab Spring, which I was the only one in the media to see for what it was, the Arab Winter. It's the darkest phase in the history of the Arab Crescent in hundreds of years. All ushered in by George Soros' money and the U.S. State Department. Jimmy Carter's minions, Brzezinski and others, I believe, are directly involved. It's one of the greatest human rights disasters in history, and they'll get away with it like they got away with bombing Serbia into the Stone Age to steal Kosovo from them. You have no idea how dangerous these progressives really are, do you?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know, this may be the last live show of the year because I'm taking tomorrow off. I think, I'm not sure, I could change my mind. And then it's New Year's Eve, Saturday night. And then we're into 2012. But I'm live for you today, yesterday, whatever, day before. Everyone's off somehow. What do you do when you're off in talk radio? How could you be off? What do you mean you're off? What do you do when you're off? What does a talk show host do when he's off? I can't imagine being off. What do? You think that they turn their mind off? They're listening to something. They're going on the internet. They're slipping away from wherever they are to just review what's going on in the world in case they have to rush back to the microphone. Then they wish that they were on. Then they get jealous that they're not on. Then they're resentful that the fill-in sounds better than them. They can't wait to get back next Tuesday. I have no idea. It's a long time you go out of your mind waiting to be. It's like you if you're not in the business. Even if you're not in the business, you're bored already. You see, leisure is overrated. Holidays are overrated. I look around. I walk around a resort town. I'm in South Florida. I'm not going to put anyone down, but you see the boredom on the faces of the fathers and the mothers. The kids enjoy a vacation because they're children. Vacations are for children. They're not for adults. I don't understand what people do. Why not advance yourself somehow? Take up watercolor painting. Learn how to mold clay. I can't understand people who immediately get up in the morning. Oh, I'm on vacation. I'm going to have a mimosa. That's their whole dream in life. Their ancestors struggled through eons of pain so they could sit on their fat behinds having a mimosa in the morning, orange juice and cheap champagne. That's their be-all and end-all of existence. Sit like a schmuck at 10 in the morning and have a mimosa. I don't understand people. But to each his own, it's a free country. You want to get stoned in the morning, it's your business. Not for me. I don't drink during the day. Never. Never. I mean, once in my life. But I drink at night after a show. I have a drink. It's such tension looking in the heart of darkness every day. It's like being an oncologist. And it's like being an oncologist, being a talk show host as involved as I am. And every night you have to open up the patient or look at the patient's x-rays and see the cancer has spread. Now you wake up every day, you're shocked by this regime, what it's done. Now they set up an 800 number for illegal alien criminals who are in jail and local jails to help them and make sure that they weren't put in there by accident. Everything the federal government does seems to be against the individual American and in favor of either the illegal alien or the foreigner. We don't understand this. How does a federal government become so out of touch with the people, I ask myself? But I don't want to talk politics. Truthfully, it's enough already. You know what I'm surprised at? Just sharing my views with so many people today. Okay, so I'm going to say my book, Abuse of Power, my novel, I'm very proud of it. First novel that was published anyway. It's 6 weeks on the New York Times list. And it's not that it wasn't reviewed. I didn't expect reviews, you know, from liberals. The book is so darn good. But I'm surprised that enologists and other experts in the field of wine and alcohol didn't understand how incredible this novel was with regard to what Jack Hatfield drank. How many passages I have in this book about what they drink and what they didn't drink and his view of the wines. It's as good as any novel in terms of alcohol, you know, enology. And then what's really shocking is that I'm a boater, you know that. And here I have a character who lives on a powerboat. And not one boating magazine, what are they, all owned by liberals? Notices that a novel comes out, a bestseller on which a man lives on a yacht. And it's all about the boat and the islands in San Francisco that people don't even know about. Shock, just shocking, shocking. Just show. I think everyone's asleep. Or I think everything in the country today is so locked down that if you don't buy it, you don't get it. I believe there's no independent opinion other than mine that is not for sale. And I believe that unless you pay somebody or do somebody a favor, nothing happens in this world. Nothing, zero. In other words, there's no independent judgment anymore. If you don't hire a PR agent to say, well, go to like Jameson and say, look, this guy writes about Jameson 12 Irish whiskey, which I do once in a while as a second backup because Jack likes Glenroth, a single malt scotch, but he usually settles for Jameson 12, which is the only rot gut that they sell in bars. But, you know, unless you buy it, you're not going to have them write about it. The character likes that particular scotch. Anyway, that's just a little, you know, it's a little bit off the beaten path because I can't take politics for one more second. What is this about Chesterfield? This was a good line in the book. I'm scanning the sex line. It's not a sexual passage about a carjack and then the terrorism. It's about my character who stops the next 9/11. Yeah, you're not interested in that. No one reads fiction anymore either. Who reads fiction? A lot of people have bought my book in hardcover. Somebody must read fiction. Movie, no. I thought there'd be a movie. Oh, here's the line on page 109 where he's talking to his friend Max, the detective, and she's a lady, black lady. And Jack and her are bantering back and forth. And Jack jokes and says, well, you know I only have eyes for you. And then she says, and for some reason they keep staring at my chest. Men are so predictable. Well, you know how I feel about sex, Max, don't you? The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the results catastrophic. She laughed. Yeah, I've read Chesterfield, Jack, but I think that's probably the scotch talking, Don Juan. Or maybe you just turned on by the fact that I saved your hide tonight. Not that I don't appreciate it, Jack. So you see what I mean? It's very good dialogue, but way over the head of the average reader. They don't want to read that. They want a Schwarzenegger action figure, somebody who is just like a robot. But I'll keep writing. My second one's coming out in about a year. What else do you want me to talk about in the Savage Nation? I'm not doing politics. It's over. You want to talk about vacations? Does anyone go on vacation? How do you tolerate a vacation? I'm technically on vacation, yet I'm on the radio. Because the thought of being off the radio for a week is not very appealing to me. It's impossible. All you do, you see, if you're not working on vacation, what you're going to do is drink more and eat more. You should see them today. Like today, I'll give you an example. I'm in a beach town in South Florida, so I bicycle every day. I love bicycling. It's my greatest outlet next to sleeping. I like sleeping and I like bicycling. So I have a little, I have a green bicycle, a Bianchi. I love this machine. It's just, I call it my heart-lung machine. So I bicycle to town every day. I'm a people watcher. So it's a beach town, so everyone's on vacation, right? All right, licking the cones, the licking crowd, while they're working around, grown men licking a cone, that's my favorite picture. A grown man in a pair of shorts licking a cone. That's, to me, the American male at his best. A pair of Bermuda shorts, white legs, and licking a cone, like a cow, like Elsie. But to each his own, if he likes licking the cone, let him lick the cone. I don't care. So I bicycle by an outdoor Italian restaurant. It has an Italian restaurant with outdoor tables across from the beach. So it's packed. I never saw anything like it. What recession? Where's the money from? I never saw anything like it. Every table in every corner, every muffin shop, every jammed out the door. You can't get in. You can't get in a restaurant. So where's the recession? I don't know where it is. I don't know where it's hitting. It must be in Ron Paul's district. So I go by this restaurant, and I see everything in the flash of an eye. My eye takes in all. My eye is a camera, as they say, as someone once wrote years ago. And I'm a keen social observer, and I like to people watch. I shoot by this restaurant. I slow down, obviously, because I want to see people eating and their social behavior. So there's a table. I'm going to try to describe it. Four people, a husband, I think husband, wife, and two children. And the son is around 12. The daughter must be 14. And then there's the couple. Not particularly good looking, not particularly bad looking. You know, like run-of-the-mill Staten Island, New Jersey types. Eating. God bless them. They're Americans. They're entitled. They didn't rob the food. And what something curious caught my eye. The mother is eating a meal. One bite is her plate. And the next bite with the fork, she's reaching diagonally across the table and picking at her son's plate in full forkfuls of meat. The poor kid is sitting there with his face down, staring at the floor. And she's knocking down her meal and her son's meal. The husband, of course, is beaten to death. He doesn't say a word. The daughter is probably dreaming of being back home, getting away from this. And the mother doesn't miss a beat like a machine. One bite my plate, one bite the son's plate. And she's not even looking at the son. The eye is darting over and she's grabbing big forkfuls of meat like a bad George Grouse painting. Big hunks of meat from a poor son's plate. As I pedaled by, all of this went in my eye. And all I could think of is who this boy is going to be when he becomes a man. A, he's going to fear and hate women. B, he's going to fear and hate his mother. C, he's going to have an eating disorder very shortly. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bing, it's the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, or if you prefer, whatever. I'm not even going to read my website to you. What's the point? What's the point? Your mind is only on Romney, Schmomney, Paul, Gingrich, Bachman. Where'd he go? What's his name? What was that guy's name that I liked for a while, had him on the show? Herman Cain. Haven't seen him. 999, that's what he'll be remembered for. You heard where that came from, didn't you? The joke that a friend of my friends told me that he apparently came on to a German lady, and she said, Herman, 999. I thought that was funny. Mike in Boston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, I'll tell you, you are one of the funniest guys I ever heard. You're a stand-up guy out of the Elks of Myron Cohen and all them great stand-up guys.
That's beautiful.
Your singing humor is absolutely hilarious, and you're a great American. Thank you, Michael.
I love hearing. I hear an Irish voice from Mike in Boston. See, that's a guy I could have a Budweiser with in a bar. He'd get a kick out of me. I'd walk in right away. They wouldn't like me at the first of it. But if they give me a chance and I start, you know, giving them my riff, I could fit right in with any crowd. I have a gift. I've always, when I was younger, I did. I don't do it anymore. I mean, it's too risky today. But I remember when I was a youngster, I went to Europe. I don't know how old I was. Right out of college. I don't remember exactly. But I remember when I rode the train from Spain to France to Italy. I rode in a train. In Spain, the Spanish women talked to me. They thought I was Spanish. I go, I just listened, the older women. Then when the train came into France, again, they spoke to me in French. They thought I was French. People talk. Then in Italy, the same thing. I didn't speak a word of any language. I studied two of them. I couldn't speak it, but why? Because I have dark eyes, and I look Mediterranean, so they all thought that I was. I guess they talk more there, thank God. At least they did then. Not anymore. I hated the French. And I remember when I was young, the Spanish were great people. And the minute the train went into France, they were so mercenary, looking for, like, all they wanted to know is how much money they can get out of you. Then when the train came through and went into Italy, it was again, bueno, bueno, buena, buena. Everything was good. Every other verb was about goodness in Italy. I don't know. It's a different culture. Everything they have words for is good. Good, better than good, better than better good, terrific, stupendous, wonderful. How does a culture develop a vocabulary that reflects a personality like that, a national personality? They're not happy anymore in Italy. Most of them are on Prozac, not wine anymore. They gave up their national obsession with wine. They're like drug addicts. The country is shot. You don't get no children, like a 0.7% birth rate in Italy amongst the Italian men. They're too busy looking at themselves in the mirror to see how they look. They don't have the time to get married. Are you kidding? What, marry? What, am I a Christian? You think I'm going to marry with children like my ugly grandfather? No, look at how I good look. Look how good looking I am. Oh, look at that. That's what happens to a society when it becomes narcissistic. The end of the culture. What would you like to talk about? 1-800-449-8255. Vacations, no vacations. I work no matter what. I'm a worker since I'm 5 years old. I'm going to work till I can. Well, now that my presence is so large on the internet, I could sit in my pajamas and do an internet show, but I don't want to do that. Look what happened to you-know-who, Hemorrhoid. Look at Hemorrhoid, what happened. Hemorrhoid left TV, never heard from him again. Where'd he go, Hem? How is he doing? How is he doing? I mean, he had the thing on Fox, Hem. He created a huge stir. I'm talking about GB. He went and created a TV network. I don't know anyone who's ever watched it. It's gone. Gone with the wind. But he's around somewhere. Then another one developed a tea, an iced tea. No one bought it. He appeared like one if by land, two if by tea. Nothing. Zero. A flash in the pan. That went up in smoke. They don't know how hard it is to, A, to create a product, and B, to create a presence outside of what you have. They should kiss the ground when you have a presence like that. You're on a network like that, and you get smart? Goodbye. You're out of business. There's no such thing as an independent in this world, incidentally. No man is an island. And I don't think I don't know it. Don't think I don't know it. I do know it. No man is an island. We're all part of a bigger whole. So trust me on that one. Okay, what do we have there on the callers now? Las Vegas, Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Doc. I could tell you in 1 minute how you can perfect your drawings to get the realism that you're trying to perfect.
I'd love. How?
I'm a portrait artist. I went to the Art Students League in New York.
Right.
And real quickly, when you go to the art supply store,
right,
you can pick up some graph paper.
Yeah.
And it's got to be gray. It comes in blue, it's got to be gray. And you're going to do this in pencil, and you take a picture of your dog. I have a poodle, same age as Teddy. He's amazing. But anyway, you take a picture, photograph, digital, and then you print the picture any size you want, black and white print. You tape it to your paper. Now first you tape the carbon paper, and then you tape the picture of your dog, and you trace it. Now you have... you have the essence of the dog. Concentrate on the eyes, because if you get the eyes right, the rest of it just falls in like music.
You have the outline of the dog. Now you have to paint in the eyes and the ears and the fur, right?
Exactly. And that part, if you start out with charcoal, I know you said you were working in...
So that's considered art today? Copying and tracing? That's art?
No, it's your photograph. Okay, you're taking photographs.
No, I like that. I was thinking about that because, of course, I'm a beginner. I'm going to use photographs, and I figured I'd paint over the photograph. I was going to actually take a digital picture, put it on a paper, and then paint over it, and just paint over the picture and try to put my own colors on top of it, like I would make Teddy green.
Savage.
Savage Nation moving towards New Year's Eve, where America gets drunk, looking forward to yet another fabulous year under Barack Hussein Obama. And then we have the election in 2012. They say it's the most important election in our lifetime. I can't disagree. I mean, I don't know of an election that was more critical than this one, given the fact that we have the first crypto communist in the White House, and then we have the lukewarm milk toasts waiting in the wings, so we don't know which way to turn. But anyway, anything but the cryptos. You know what I mean? I'd rather have a crypto conservative than a I'd rather have an ersatz conservative than a crypto communist. Let's put it to you that way. That's what I was trying to say. I'd rather have an ersatz conserve than a crypto com. You want to call a show? Go ahead. 1-800-449-8255. Maria has an important point. Go ahead. You're on the air, Maria.
Hi. I heard what you said before about Italians. I'm an Italian-American. My parents are immigrants. And somehow in the small town that we're from, they're still waiting to be married. And so many family members of mine have...
You mean in Italy? You mean in Italy they're waiting to get married?
They're still old-fashioned in the small town outside of Naples, waiting to be married and having children, and some of them even moving to America.
What do you mean? The women are waiting?
Women are waiting, men are looking, and some of it is even arranged.
Well, I believe the arranged marriage will be a very big big part of the future in America, because people are having so much trouble finding anyone, knowing who they really are, whether they're crazy or grifters. They don't know who they are. That the arranged marriage starts to become more appealing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some religious people who said to me all of their marriages are arranged. You know that Orthodox Jews have arranged marriages. You know that, don't you?
Yes, definitely.
They don't go in the street to a bar to look for someone having a Manischewitz and expect to find anyone of quality. But they're going to find a woman sitting in a bar and they're going to marry her and she's going to have children with them? They would rather jump off a bridge. They go through a courtship with the whole thing. Then they have children right away. They knock out one a year right off the bat. The minute they're married, right away, they don't waste a second. No planning, nothing. They have as many children as they can, as fast as they can. They represent the old world in that regard. So what are you calling about? I forgot.
I was calling about something else, but when I heard you say the thing about Italy, it made me think of that. But I was calling to make a point that I agree with you that the young people of this, I'm in my 30s, and I didn't go to college, and I, you know, did well for myself, and I have a career. I don't know what's to come of young people in their 20s if they have a future, if they go to college or undergraduates, and I have young children. I agree with you. I don't know if there's a future out there for them. I don't know what they're to do.
Maria, there's always a future. There is always a future in our society for someone who has the drive to create it for themselves. Now, if you're going to go out there looking for a government job, there's no future. If you're going to go out and look for someone to hand them something, maybe not. You know, they're going to have to do it on their own. And the earlier you teach them that opportunity doesn't knock, they have to knock on opportunity's door, the better off they will be. Teach them to work hard. I don't care what the job is. I had both of my children work after school, even when they were young, and their friends laughed at them. And both of them are very stable citizens because of it. Because they had to work very young. I think work is the only salvation for most people, only they don't realize it because we've been sold a bill of goods that leisure is the only salvation. I don't know that leisure is the only salvation. If you can get through a life of leisure, I admire you. I can't. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. There are people who inherit a lot of money and they don't make much of their lives. Doesn't mean they're evil. And then there are people who inherit a lot of money and make more. I'll give you an example. Donald Trump inherited money. His father was a very hardworking German immigrant who made a fortune in building in New York. Donald made a bigger fortune, but he had a brother who didn't do anything with his life. He was caught up in problems. I believe it was alcohol or drugs. I don't really know what, by what I read. So how do you explain in the same family, the same household, one is motivated to build upon the father's the inheritance he got from his parents, and the other is not motivated at all? I don't have the explanation for you. You know, that goes to the nature-nurture argument, which we've had since the beginning of time, and no one's ever going to resolve that one. I think it's a combination of both, by the way. I don't think it's either or, nature or nurture, with regard to children. I think it's a combination, incidentally. But it's the old story my mother used to tell it to me, and part of her upbringing was, She'd always say to them, how do you explain in the same household, two brothers, one becomes a cop and the other becomes a criminal? I don't know how you explain it. She said, the same parents, the same apartment. I saw it over and over again when I was young. One was working for the law and the other was working breaking the law. She said, how do you explain it? Because she wanted to argue that it wasn't to do with nurturing. It wasn't to do with the parents. It was to do with their inherent genetic or whatever. I don't believe that that's 100% true, because even in the same household, children are raised differently by the same parents. There's either one is favored or something. Or the mother, let's say, took too many drinks while the second one came along. Who knows? She slipped on a banana peel and banged her head against the bedpost. Who knows why one turns out one way and one the other? Well, that's the beauty of life. There are a lot of mysteries. Aren't there a lot of mysteries in life? Why must everything be so cut and dried and nailed down where you know everything? It's good that in every family there should be an idiot and you know, potentially a genius. That's part of the human condition, is a family produces an idiot every now and again. What's wrong with that? Doesn't mean they're evil. They could always go to work for the EPA, or they can get a job for the Department of Homeland Security, or if they're really screwed up, they can go work for the Transportation Safety Administration. If you produce a real moron, let's say you produce an idiot, okay, they go to work for the EPA. Then, God forbid, you produce an imbecile, they go to work for the IRS. Then a moron, though, the most they could achieve is a TSA worker, where they let someone from the Middle East arriving with no baggage and a one-way ticket and cash, they wave them right through because they have an Arabic-sounding name, while the little old lady, the nun, 90 years old in a wheelchair, who's crippled, they take her in the back and they give her a frisking. That's a job for someone with an 80 IQ after a dose of fish oils. And that's what makes life very interesting. Oh, Beowulf, do you have, since we're concluding the hour shortly, can you dig up for me and my listeners that most remarkable piece that we played this year of, one of my favorite authors, Henry Miller, in his own voice describing putting one of his neighbor, his relatives into a madhouse, a house for the mentally feeble. Remember that? How heartbreaking, could tear your guts out. But the way he does it with his Brooklyn voice, Henry Miller, one of the greatest writers of all time, describing the car, the trolley car, and he was given the job of taking his cousin to the asylum. And what goes through his mind when he gets there is so touching. Huh? You have it already? You picked it out? You got it already? You got it lined up? Just even if you start it. All right, if you got it ready to go, I'm going to play it. In a minute. Not yet. Are you ready? Don't play it quite yet. I'd rather talk about Newt Gingrich's waistline than anything. Indiana Malin, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you for being live tonight, because you represent the 20% of us that are out here self-directed, self-employed. We make the economy work. We employ about 80% of the people.
Right.
And
right.
You're in there busting your ass. I know you got some health issues.
That's right. And we pay 53% of the taxes while we got to listen to these rat vermin tell us that we should pay more taxes. I'd like to tell them what I think I'd like to do with those wastrels who sit in on their behinds there. They pay no taxes.
Hey, you go ahead and tell them. And I'm glad that you take and make lemons into lemonade. You got this awful situation in Britain where these pudding heads, I can't use the word I want to use, put you on a list with terrorists and murders. You turn it into a best-selling novel, which, by the way, is excellent. I recommend everybody to get it. It's a great read.
No, it's true. I did. I made it into a best-selling novel. I did turn it into a lemonade. You're right. I didn't even think of it that way. It is the story about Jack, isn't it?
The only thing I can hope is that they'll hand you another misfortune, which you can turn into another great fortune, and just keep shoving it in their face. You keep it up. I'm proud of you.
Oh, that's kind. I love my listeners. That's the best New Year's Eve present I ever had. Okay, so now it's too long to play the whole thing, but here's Henry Miller, great American author, in his description of taking his poor, feeble cousin to an asylum.
It always seemed astounding to me how jolly they were in our family, despite the calamities that were always threatening. Jolly in spite of everything. There was cancer, dropsy, cirrhosis of the liver, insanity, thievery, mendacity, buggery, incest, paralysis, tapeworms, abortions, triplets, idiots, drunkards, ne'er-do-wells, fanatics, sailors, tailors, watchmakers, scarlet fever, whooping cough, meningitis, running ears, Korea, stutterers, jailbirds, dreamers, storytellers, bartenders, and finally, there was Uncle George and Tante Amelia, the morgue and the insane asylum. No one knew that Tante Amelia was going completely off her nut, that when we reached the corner, she would leap forward like a reindeer and bite a piece out of the moon, and nobody could think quick enough to stop it. Just like that it happened, in the twinkle of a star. And now I'm going to tell you what those bastards said to me. They said, Henry, you take her to the asylum tomorrow, and don't tell them that we can afford to pay for her. Fine. Always merry and bright. Mm. The next morning, we boarded the trolley together, and we rode out into the country. If Mealy asked me where we were going, I was to say to visit Aunt Monica. But Mealy didn't ask any questions. She sat quietly beside me and pointed to the cows now and then. She saw blue cows and green ones. She knew their names. Mm. She asked what happened to the moon in the daytime. Mm. And did I have a piece of liverwurst by any chance? Mm. During the journey, I wept. I couldn't help it. When people are too good in this world, they have to be put under lock and key. Wow. There's something wrong with people who are too good. It's true Mealy was lazy. She was born lazy. It's true that she was a poor housekeeper. It's true she didn't know how to hold on to her husband when they had found her one. When Paul ran off with the woman from Hamburg, she just sat in a corner and wept. The others wanted her to do something, put a bullet into him, raise a rumpus, sue for alimony. But Mealy sat quiet. She wept. She hung her head. She was like a pair of torn socks that are kicked around here, there, everywhere, always turning up at the wrong moment. And now she's very tranquil, and she calls the cows by their first name. The moon fascinates her. She has no fear because I'm with her, and she always trusted me. I was her favorite. Even though she was a half-wit, she was good to me. The others were more intelligent, but their hearts were bad. Sometimes when she was fired from a job, they used to send me to fetch her. Mealy never knew her way home. And I remember how happy she was whenever she saw me coming. She would say innocently that she wanted to stay with us. Why couldn't she stay with us? I used to ask myself that over and over. Why couldn't they make a place for her by the fire? Let her sit there and dream, if that's what she wanted to do. Why must everybody work, even the saints and the angels? Why must half-wits set a good example? I'm thinking now that after all, it may be good for Mealy where I'm taking her. No more work. Just the same, I'd rather they had made a corner for her somewhere. Walking down the gravel path toward the big gates, Mealy becomes uneasy. Mm. Even a puppy knows when it is being carried to a pond to be drowned. Mealy is trembling now. At the gate, they are waiting for us. The gate yawns. Mealy is on the inside. I am on the outside. They are trying to coax her along. They are gentle with her now. They speak to her so gently. But Mealy is terror-stricken. She turns round and runs toward the gate. I'm still standing there. She puts her arms through the bars and clutches my neck. I kiss her tenderly on the forehead. Gently, I unlock her arms. The others are going to take her again. I can't bear seeing that. I must go. I must run. For a full minute, however, I stand and look at her. Her eyes seem to have grown enormous. Two great round eyes, full and black as the night, staring at me uncomprehendingly. No maniac can look that way. No idiot can look that way. Only an angel or a saint. When I ran away from the gate, I stopped beside a high wall and burying my head in my arms against the wall, I sobbed as I had never sobbed since I was a child. Meanwhile, they were giving Mealy a bath and putting her into regulation dress. They parted her hair in the middle, brushed it down flat, and tied it into a knot at the nape, half crazy, or three-quarters crazy, or just slightly cracked. When you say, "May I have pen and ink to write a letter?" they say yes, and they hand you a broom to sweep the floor. If you pee on the floor absentmindedly, you have to wipe it up. You can sob all you like, but you mustn't violate the rules of the house. A bug house has to be run in orderly fashion, just as any other house. When Mealy stood at the gate with eyes so bright and round, her mind must have traveled back like an express train. Everything must have leaped to her mind at once. Her eyes were so big and bright, as if they saw more than they could comprehend. Bright with terror, and beneath the terror, a limitless confusion. That's what made them so beautifully bright. You have to be crazy to see things so lucidly, so all at once. If you're great, you can stay that way, and people will believe in you, swear by you, turn the world upside down for you. But if you're only partly great, or just a nobody, then what happens to you is lost.
That's Henry Miller, one of the greatest writers in American literature. And this segment, for some reason, came to my mind. It is dedicated to my brother Jerome. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I don't know why I thought of that Henry Miller piece. I really don't know where it came from, why I played it, how it came out. I don't understand sometimes how the show works. It's very impressionistic, by the way, and you'll have to just flow with it. But, you know, my call screener, Doug Lynn, said that he had three people call who were in tears, who said they don't want to go on the air, but they were just wrecked from it, heartbroken. I mean, when you say even a puppy knows when it's going to be put into the pond and drowned. And so you say, well, why'd you play it? I don't know why I played it. I have no idea why. I haven't the slightest idea why it fit into the show, but it did. I can jump to conclusions as to where it fit and why. Why I felt the emotional need for that piece on the air and how it fit in with what's going on in America. I don't want to stretch it. I don't think that that's it. But I think I'm going to be on the air tomorrow as a result of it. I think tomorrow will be my last show of the year rather than tonight. I was going to take tomorrow night off and flying Saturday, but I think I'm going to be on anyway, and I'm going to do tomorrow what I maybe should have done tonight, which is the best. I'm going to ask you. In fact, here's your homework assignment. Think back over the year. What was the high point of the Savage Nation for 2011? What was the low point for 2011, other than telling you who Ron Paul is? What was your favorite piece? What was your least favorite piece? What do you want me to do in 2012 that I haven't done? What would you like me to do in 2012 that I did do? You know, I think I'm going to do that tomorrow. At least that's the plan. So you have a little bit of an assignment, an interactive assignment for the show for tomorrow night. No point. I have nothing to do tomorrow. I wanted to sit there and steal food from a child's plate with a fork, if you know what I mean metaphorically. Big guy, take the night off. So I'm ready to go. Then what? I'm going to eat a longer meal? Eat more and drink more? No, I'm not going to do it. It'll be takeout food and drink a beer in the house. The best meal in the world is in the house anyway, for me. Nothing against restaurants. I just like eating at home. I don't have to listen to noise after a radio show. Anyway, another big hour coming up right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back.
We know that the U.S. military budget on a yearly basis almost equals every other country's yearly budget for military combined. We're going to aspire to the things we want to see happen on Wall Street. We will need a president who will start talking about dismantling the U.S. military empire. These vets for peace said two simple direct demands of anyone who occupies the White House. Simple. Cut the military budget in half. And start using as your basic foreign policy premise the dismantling of the U.S. military empire and the rejoining of the U.S. government with other nations to make this world a better place to meet our needs and to save our planet. Thank you very much.
Questions for the Savage Nation. A new poll just out indicates Romney would beat Obama 45-39. Big deal. It's a poll. I believe Romney is the only electable Republican. Who do you think is the least electable Republican? The Occupy vermin has converged on Iowa for the caucuses, threatening to block them. Should they be arrested by the FBI, the CIA, and Homeland Security? Well, of course they should, but since this government seems to be behind the Occupy movement, they'll probably provide them with honey turkey sandwiches.
Buenas noches. Me llamo Kaylin Strain y soy parte de Occupy Des Moines. Y estoy aquí para dar representación a todos los pobres, los inmigrantes y los migrantes, y contra la discriminación religiosa o en base de clase o de desabilidad. Tenemos que terminar estas discriminaciones y soportamos toda la gente en toda manera ahora.
Education should be free to every man, woman, and child in this nation. Free! I don't care if you want to get a master's degree, a PhD, or a half a dozen PhDs. You should be, if you want to be a career student, you should become a career student. Period. Gratis of Uncle Sam.
Ron Paul has told his followers to shave their beards and cover up their tattoos. He's also been careful not to alienate the Occupy movement. Seems to me Ron Paul is the candidate of the Occupy movement. How about you? 2 years ago, Ron Paul went on Iranian state TV and compared the Gaza Strip to a concentration camp. This is an amazing thing, not treason, but sheer idiocy. After the Iowa caucuses are over, thank God, which Caucasian Republican candidate will drop out of the Iowa caucuses? The TSA is now screening trains, subways, and ferries. What's next? Your bathroom? And here's what's on michaelsavage.com. UN flags at half-staff to mark the death of one of the world's worst dictators and murderers, Kim Jong-il. Can you believe this? Latest poll from Rasmussen, Romney 45, Obama 39. Muslim leaders to boycott New York City mayor's breakfast. What a good idea that is. Who needs them? Scott Brown ties himself to Obama. No kidding. Romney leads, Santorum surges in new Iowa poll. Iran rejects U.S. warning on Hormuz. North Korea declares Kim Jong-un the new supreme leader. Burning books in Cairo all over again. ICE launches hotline for busted immigrants with translation services. Which side are they on?
It's our money and our weapons. But I think we encouraged it. Certainly the president has said nothing to diminish it. Matter of fact, he justifies it on moral grounds at all. They have a right to this without ever mentioning the tragedy of Gaza. You know, the real problems are there. To me, I look at it like a concentration camp and people are making homemade bombs and like they're the aggressors. I think if we weren't in the Middle East, it'd be a much greater motivation for Israel to deal with all the people and maybe the Arab League. Maybe they would be talking to the Arab League every single day to work out problems. But they don't do that. They don't have the motivation because they know we'll back them up. No matter what happens over there, Israel knows, and our government knows, Republican or Democrat, that we'll do whatever is necessary to bail out Israel.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. Tourist arrested for bringing gun to 9/11 memorial, even though the woman had a legal carry permit in Tennessee. Islamist murderers threaten Africa's survival. Muslim jihadists in Uganda throw acid on bishop's face. Take a look, they burnt off half his face. Here's Savage's interview with Donald Trump. Hamas leader, goal is the destruction of Israel in stages. No kidding. Why doesn't Israel destroy them in stages? What are they sitting and waiting to be killed for? Also on MichaelSavage.com, how much do you think the U.S. government paid researchers to study shrimp running on a treadmill? $682,250 for shrimp running on a treadmill, a study. Just think of all those wasted shrimp cocktails. Pakistan admits jihadist killed Christian cabinet member. Ugh. Someone's knocking at the door. If you'd like to see what happens to an old rocker who is off her rocker, go to the bottom of MichaelSavage.com and take a picture, take a gander, take a peek, if you dare, at Sinead O'Connor, whatever she calls herself. She looks sort of like Barney Frank with tattoos, with a towel wrapped around her body. How does this happen to a woman? God only knows. Liberalism is a mental disorder. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Let's go to the callers. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'll tell you. When you you struck a chord when you were talking about the moderate exercise, and you're absolutely right. About a year ago, well, a year and a half ago, in January of 2008, I was doing heavy squats, okay, with my trainer.
Right.
And she noticed that my right eyelid was drooping, and I had ptosis and meiosis in my right eye. The right eyelid was drooping. My pupil was small. I called my doctor. He said, "Look, that's a serious condition. You got to get to the hospital right now."
Right.
And I'll tell you what. I got to the emergency room, and later they gave me an MRI, and I had a carotid dissection. I mean, that, you know, I've all saw the move. When you're really pressing hard on doing heavy squats or any heavy movement, I was 40 at the time. And,
wow.
And I'll tell you what. Yeah, I mean, it blew out the inside of my right carotid artery.
Well, right, because your body can... Look, it's common sense that when you strain your body, let's use old, simple terminology, not medical jargon, not big words. When you strain your body, you're putting pressure on internal organs. I mean, in common parlance, right? And some of those internal organs would include the vascular system. And so when you put extra pressure, internal pressure on your arterial system, your venous system, your... In other words, your vascular system, you're liable to break something, right, Dan?
Absolutely, and I did. I tore the inner lining in my right internal carotid artery. Right?
So how did immediate surgery saved you?
Well, I didn't need surgery. I needed to go on blood thinners for 9 months. I mean, and that stuff is just awful. I had to give myself a shot every day, and then I had to go on warfarin.
What were you on, Coumarin?
It's called Coumadin.
Yeah, it's Coumadin. I know how it was... People don't even realize how that was developed. You know that I remember when I was studying pharmacology as a graduate student, I think it was a student in graduate school designed a rat poison that if you put it into the food, the bait, the rat would eat the food, and the poison that he developed was the progenitor, the grandfather of the Coumadin. It caused bleeding. The rat would bleed to death. Did you know that?
It's rat poison. Exactly, I did. And
very few people understand that medicines and poisons are only a matter of dosage. You know that.
That's exactly it. It's an old drug, and I, you know, you're taking a controlled dose of rat poison.
Well, so today you've given up. The point of your story is a little different, though. It's about weightlifting and how it almost killed you. So obviously you've modified your exercise regimen.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I don't push myself. I do more cardio. I do push-ups, things with my own body weight. I do weights, but, you know, more reps, less.
Now, Dan, when you do push-ups, here's another one. When you do push-ups, how many do you do? Do you do till you're gagging?
No. I'll do maybe 25 or 30, sometimes 50, but I don't do it till I'm, you know. Why do
right.
that?
That's exactly right. What I'm getting at. Think of Tai Chi when you do any exercise. Think of gentle motion. Think of slow motion, easy on your body. The body's not made for it after a certain age. You're not a kid anymore.
Exactly. And even kids.
Well, Dan, you know, you read increasingly of young kids getting heart attacks today playing ball. It happens even to youngsters today because of the garbage food that they're eating. Their arteries are clogged.
Exactly.
Do you know that, Dan, do you know that famous study of autopsies that were done on soldiers in the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, and what they found?
No.
Oh, well, hold on. I'm going to tell it to you on the air. And I think maybe if I'm not, well, I can't with any certainty say it was going back to World War II because I would be making it up. But I know for sure that there was a comparison done between the deceased soldiers, the autopsies, for example, of soldiers who had died in the Korean War and then of soldiers who they autopsied during the Vietnam War. And there was a degeneration of the arterial system, the cardiovascular system, that was dramatic as a result of dietary alterations in the American diet, rather. In other words, if you went back and you did an autopsy of guys who died in World War II, you would have found a much different picture internally that is in their arteries than you would have found, let's say, by 1952. And then you speed it up to 1969, it's a whole different story. Because the junk food diet had already become prevalent in America by the time these boys, God bless their souls, the guys who died in Vietnam, who had, you know, they already grew up. You're talking about guys who were born in 1950, et cetera, maybe 1950. So by then they were like, they're already eating junk food in the 50s. Back in the 40s, there was very little junk food. The diet was totally different back in the 1940s. And, of course, you go back and back and back. It's the same thing. You find more whole foods, less fat, less sugar in the diet. Right now we have a sugar epidemic in America. And you say, well, what does that have to do with arterial damage? Well, you read the work of the recently deceased great doctor. He just died. And he was one of my heroes. But I don't think I want to put his name out and have a rush on it. You know, the guys but he wrote about the sugar disease a long time ago. He said a good many of the degenerative diseases of our time are based on too high a quantity of refined sugars in the diet. He wasn't even laying the blame on the doorstep of the fats, by the way, which is a whole other controversial area. We are fat-obsessed in the United States of America to the detriment of the health of many women and children. You see families today raising children on pure vegetarian or vegan diets, and the children are suffering. They're tired. They can't focus. They're not bright. They're getting vitamin deficiency diseases, and the mothers will not give them a hamburger. Oh, no, my child's never eaten red meat. Great. Great, but take a look at your child's health. My child's never had a piece of chicken. Well, I had this experiment when my children were little, and I told you about it. There were many people back in the day who were raising their children vegetarian. I wasn't, because I knew children needed a diet rich in protein, a certain amount of fat, etc. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I was totally into health at that time. You know, ground up apricots, vegetables. So don't think I was just feeding junk food. But mixed in with every meal was a high degree of good quality protein. You know, if I made hamburgers, I ground onions into them. So the long and short of it is if friends' kids would come over to dinner, and my kids were eating chicken, and the parent with the vegetarian child would turn her head, that kid would grab the chicken off my kid's plate. The child was starving. Now go to the women today, the young women. The skinny young women with perfect figures, so-called. The ones who look like post-op transvestites, which is the new model, let's say, for the American woman. It used to be a full-hip woman. A woman with a certain voluptuousness was considered the social norm. Today, because of various influences, which I don't have to spell out, a woman tries to look like a man who's had a surgery. These women are near insane, many of them, from a lack of nutrients such as iron. They're suffering iron deficiency. They're suffering deficiency of the B vitamins. They're suffering folic acid deficiencies because they have known nothing about food and diet. Nothing. They're not being taught anything about it. Many of them have anxiety attacks. They put them on pills. And the reason they'll take the pills is because it doesn't add any weight. It's not what they need. They need to go on a balanced diet, which means real food. So anyway, and by the way, you can be a vegetarian, don't get me wrong, if you know how to balance your foods. Please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I wrote books on this going back 30 years ago, so I understand that. You can. It's very difficult, though. And then you have to supplement your diet with certain B vitamins, which you're not going to get from the vegetables. But people don't do that. They don't know it. But women are a special case. I mean, women are different than men with regard to things that occur in their body on a regular monthly basis. And during that phase of their month, they're losing a certain amount of iron, for example. They are deficient in iron, and it causes an energy loss. Women don't understand this, and they have to understand it. So anyway, look, this is well established in good old health books that were written, I would say, more than 10 years ago. You can't find a lot of this information anymore. And yes, I'm going to pitch you now. Buy Healing Children Naturally. Why? Because it actually has great diets for prospective parents who can't have children. There's a diet for pregnancy. There's diets for the father even prior to conception. You say, wow, that's quackery. All right, then go take drugs. See if I care.
Savage.
The Iranian mullahs and the Hitler of Iran again threatening to close the Straits of Hormuz, through which about 20% or 18% of the world's oil flows. Devastating effect on the world's economy. What should the United States do in response to this threat? And can this madness be stopped? Well, joining us right now on the Savage Nation is Eric Stackelback, a terrorism and national security expert for CBN News. Eric Stackelback, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you. Great to be here as always.
Well, what can we really do to stop the Hitler of Iran and the mullahs from locking up the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, look, we have many options at our disposal, Michael, and the main option is the military option. We have our 5th Fleet there in that Strait of Hormuz region. We could easily stop Iran if we want to. If Iran is so foolish to try and shut down that strategic waterway, the Strait of Hormuz, where some one-third of the world's oil supply passes through, if they're foolish enough to do that, we can absolutely stop them through military means with our 5th Fleet. That's without a doubt. We can stop Iran from doing this. We could send a clear message. It shouldn't even have to get to that, though. We can send a clear message to Iran, to the mullahs, that if you dare try to disrupt the oil flow coming through the Strait of Hormuz, we will react with overwhelming force, and we will sink your navy in the Strait of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf region. Now, that might sound drastic to some people, but this is a big deal in that, as I said, one-third of the world's oil supply passes through the Strait of Hormuz, Michael, and the main thing here is if this causes an oil interruption, if Iran shuts down that strategic waterway, we have no plan, does the U.S., to deal with an oil interruption. None. We have contingency plans for hurricanes, for terrorist attacks. We don't have a contingency plan if that oil is choked off. Now, the Saudis have stepped up and said they would try to up their oil production, but look, that's a lot of oil that you're choking off in the Strait of Hormuz, and I'll do you one better, or one worse, depending on how you look at it. If Iran shut off the Strait of Hormuz, and they also attacked some Saudi oil facilities in eastern Saudi Arabia, that's another great bundle of the world's oil supply comes out of there. Wow, we're in a major, major disastrous situation. We don't have that contingency plan, as I said, for an oil interruption. So the bottom line is, stop Iran, send the message to them, first of all, that you cannot do this, we will not allow it, and make it convincing. Make them really believe us that we mean what we say, because right now the Iranians think we are a paper tiger, especially under this administration, and that our bark is worse than our bite.
What do you think the chances are that the United States and Iran go to war in 2012?
Well, look, I've said all along that I don't believe, Michael, that the Obama administration will strike Iran's nuclear facilities. It goes against every fiber of this president's being. Throughout his tenure as president, he has extended the olive branch. He's reached out to the Iranians. He's had his hand slapped away every time by Ahmadinejad and the mullahs, but he continues to reach out. He tries to engage in diplomacy. He just wants to negotiate with the Iranians, even though they've made clear that they are not interested, number one, in negotiating with the great Satan, the United States, and number two, in giving up their nuclear weapons program. They're not going to do it. That said, I've maintained all along that I believe, because the Obama administration will not take action against these nuclear facilities, they have come to the conclusion that they can contain a nuclear-armed Iran, which is madness, because you can't contain a regime that has apocalyptic notions, that believes that they can usher in the end times and the return of the Islamic Messiah. You can't contain a regime with an ideology like that when they have nuclear weapons. They will use them for Israel. Iran is obviously in close proximity to Israel, an existential threat to Israel, existential threat to America as well, but even more pressing against Israel. I've always said Israel will take action. But, Michael, I have to say, and I still believe that, if the U.S. didn't move. But I have to say, in the past few weeks, I've been very interested in some of the signals coming out of the Obama administration. We had Leon Panetta, the defense secretary, say a few weeks ago that there's no way that Israel should strike Iran's nuclear facilities. It would be a catastrophe. He says this publicly. He undermines Israel. He telegraphs our feelings on the matter. And Iran says, hey, no way the U.S. is going to strike us. But then Panetta comes out a week later, and he says, very interesting, in an interview with CBS, that yes, we would take action. There's no way we can allow Iran to go nuclear. We would take action to stop that. So he flipped, did our defense secretary, within the span of a week, he flipped to saying, no way, my God, it would be crazy to strike Iran's nuclear facilities, to all of a sudden saying, we would stop that. So it's very interesting here. Think about it. If the Obama administration had a successful strike against Iran's nuclear facilities, that's a very big plus on his side with the 2012 election looming. A strike against Iran's nuclear facilities, number one, it's necessary. Number two, that would galvanize the entire country, Republican and Democrat. It would humiliate the mullahs, possibly have regime change there in Iran. It could be a great foreign policy success for this president, you know, amidst a litany of foreign policy blunders and disasters. A successful strike against Iran's nuclear facilities, Michael, would do two things. Number one, it'd be a great electoral coup for the Obama administration. And number two, the Obama administration could say to Israel, to Bibi Netanyahu, hey, we have erased this Iranian nuclear threat. We've eliminated it. We're the most, the U.S. obviously is the most militarily capable of doing it too. So he could say, hey, Israel, we have eliminated the Iranian nuclear threat. Now there's nothing to stop the establishment of a Palestinian state. Now, Israel, with Iran out of the way, you must sit down to the negotiating table with the Palestinians, make concessions, and establish a Palestinian state. So I'm playing devil's advocate here a bit, Michael. I still think that the Obama administration, unless Iran attacks first, or unless Iran, like we're discussing, does something insane and shuts the Strait of Hormuz, which isn't outside the realm of possibility, unless that happens and we're forced to respond, I cannot see this administration taking action against Iran. But as I laid out, if they did take action, it could be a plus for them in many ways and a big negative for Israel.
What should the administration be doing to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons? Can it be stopped at this point?
Well, what we should do, and I know this is a very unsavory option, Michael, but it's a sad, cold, bitter, harsh reality. We should take military action against those nuclear facilities. There's no other choice. Look, sanctions have not worked. Sanctions have bit. They've affected Iran in the pocketbook. Absolutely. Even Hezbollah, Iran's proxy, is feeling the bite a little bit in that Iran has had to decrease funding there. They've had to decrease their funding to Hamas, their other proxy. So look, sanctions have hurt, even though the Obama administration hasn't even gone all the way and sanctioned Iran's central bank, which would really hurt. They've hurt. Okay. But Iran has survived. They've weathered the sanctions. They've weathered the sabotage against their nuclear facilities. They've weathered everything we've thrown at them non-militarily. They've weathered it. They've weathered computer viruses that have attacked their nuclear program. They've weathered all of it, and they forged ahead. Even the UN nuclear watchdog last month, Michael, released a report saying, yes, Iran's march towards nuclear weapons continues. We all know it. Even Panetta, the defense secretary who I mentioned, even Panetta says, yes, they may have the bomb within a year. Nothing will stop this regime. Nothing short of military action, because they believe, and Michael, you and I have discussed this many times on the show, they believe that it is their divine right from Allah to have these weapons. They see the so-called Arab Spring as another divine signal. If they get these weapons, they can make their end time scenario come true. If they have the world's deadliest weapons, they can strike Israel, they can strike the U.S., they can cause global chaos, and in their insane worldview, that means the Islamic Messiah will return to earth and lead the armies of Islam to victory. Michael, I know it sounds crazy, but they truly believe this, and they will shape policy around it. So how do you deal with such a regime? There's no choice but to take, for the U.S., but to take out those nuclear facilities, attack the base, Iranian military bases and strongholds of Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps, the true power brokers in that country, weaken that regime, take out those facilities. At the end of the day, we need regime change. I know no one wants to hear it. Hey, we just had wars in Iraq, Afghanistan. I get it. But you know what? In the Iranian ideology, at the end of the day, Israel is only the little Satan. It's America that is the great Satan and the ultimate target in this Iranian worldview. And Michael, our own Pentagon says that by the year 2015, Iran could have long-range ballistic missiles that could reach the east coast of the United States. And those missiles will be nuclear-tipped. So this is an existential threat not only to Israel, but to America, to Europe. They already have missiles that can reach some of Europe. In a perfect world, Michael, the U.S., Europe would lead an international coalition to eliminate these nuclear facilities. I don't think it's going to happen unless Iran attacks us first and we're forced to respond. So that leaves Israel to act and to act as the leader of the free world, a title that this president has abdicated. Israel is going to have to strike those nuclear facilities.
Can we really trust this administration or any of the GOP candidates to do what is necessary to stop World War III?
You know, Michael, a few things here. I think, number one, I look at the candidates and I see them talk. I like what I'm hearing on Iran from Santorum, especially. Rick Santorum has been sounding the alarm on the Iranian threat since at least 2004. I've met him here in Washington. He's a good man. He gets it on Iran. You know, Gingrich says the right things on Iran. Romney says the right things on Iran. Romney's not bold enough for me when he talks about Iran or radical Islam jihad in general. He gets it, but I want to see him be more bolder. Hey, man, it's 1939. The barbarians are at the gates when it comes to Iran, when it comes to this jihadist. We need to be bold, think outside the box, and be tough. So I like what I hear from Santorum in particular on Iran. One guy I can tell you, Michael, who when he talks about Iran, I think he's an honorary mullah, is Ron Paul. When he talks about Iran, my head explodes. This is a guy who I don't think he has ever taken a minute to study Iran, to study Iran's ideology, to study the Iranian regime, how it works, to study the Middle East, to study Islam, to study the history of Islam, to possibly read the Quran. I don't think Ron Paul has done any of that, and it's obvious in his insane approach. Let Iran get nuclear weapons, he says. They're no threat to us. Look, Iran's founding motto, the founding motto of the Iranian Revolution since 1979, has been death to America, not just Israel, death to America. This is the creed they live by. It's not just bluster. They've attacked us time and time again over the past 32 years. They are at war with us. But Ron Paul says, nah, forget about it. They're not at war with us. Ignore it. It'll go away. It's all our fault. Well, Ron, I have news for you. If you look at the history of the region from the year 632 AD, when Islam roared out of the Arabian Peninsula, until the present day, there's been wave after wave of Islamic jihad against the West. Now, I'm sorry, Ron. Don't say that I hate all Muslims to say this. He accused Michelle Bachmann, Michael, of hating all Muslims because she criticized the Iranian regime. What I'm saying is there's been wave after wave of the West. Before the United States existed, before Israel existed in 1948, was reestablished, before we existed as a nation, throughout the centuries, Islamic jihadists were attacking the West. They were attacking Europe. There's a reason they conquered Spain, Sicily, the Balkans, Greece, Hungary, Romania. The West, before the U.S. and Israel even existed. It's nothing we did in the West. It is their ideology. It is the ideology that they follow, and they will point to Islam's core texts. It is Islamic ideology that motivates the jihad against the West, against Israel. That's why no matter what Ron Paul says, what concessions he wants to give Iran, how nice he wants to be to them, they're not going to stop. We have a bullseye on our backs.
Eric Stackelback, have a happy new year. And again, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much. Happy new year. And you can check out my book, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. I have a whole chapter on this Iranian threat. Thanks again.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Let's make it political. Remember 6 months ago, there was a man who built the driving force behind the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and he was a major operative in cybersecurity for America, and he was found wandering around in the streets of Washington, D.C., and then his body was found thrown in a dumpster in Delaware. Remember, in a landfill? Notice how that's been swept under the rug. Can you believe you're living in a free country anymore? Do you believe you're living in a free country anymore? When that story, that death, that man with his prominence has been swept under the rug, you are living in a banana republic. If whoever killed him can get away with that, they can kill any one of us and get away with it, because your mind is distracted by the filth, by the pornography and the sports that they force down your throat like geese being fattened up for your liver. And so therefore, I could not believe that this story had been dropped. So what I did was I fictionalized that character in my book, Abuse of Power, okay? So I'm going to read to you that little setting. So Jack is in his room working on a clock to calm his mind down. Over the years, Jack's interest had expanded from watches to clocks. His father said he'd move backward because clocks were larger and easier to repair. But Jack loved the sound of the bells when they struck on the half and on the hour. Winding one particular wall clock seemed to reset his mind. It was his favorite, a walnut German Berliner made by Kienzel in 1880. The brass face was embossed with a winged angel, the pendulum driven by an eight-day spring-wound movement that played the Westminster chimes on the half hour. Jack often smiled at the irony of being banned from entering Britain as he listened to the harmonious gongs. Okay, so he's working on his clocks. So we're moving along now to page 121. And now he's working on a particular watch. And the watch he's working on is a Hamilton Gilbert, which is, interestingly enough, I went and bought one on the Internet, which broke because I overwhelmed it. I had to send it back to the clockmaker. So he's working on this Hamilton Gilbert circa 1952, which was a very popular pocket watch at the time that was often given to employees after a certain number of years of service, blah, blah, blah. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. He's working on his clocks. It was nearly 3 a.m. and the sound startles him when his cell phone rings. Who would be calling him at this time of morning? Setting the watch down, Jack fumbled the phone from his pocket, checked the screen, and saw that the number was blocked. He pressed the receive button, put it on speaker, and placed the phone on the desk. Hello? There was static on the line, followed by a moment of silence. Then a slurred but familiar voice said, Hatfield, sat you? Bob Copeland. He sounded as if he might be drunk. Hatfield, you there? It was unusual for Copeland to be calling him directly like this. With his penchant for secrecy, their normal mode of communication was a text message, like earlier tonight, and Jack had no doubt that those messages went through half a dozen encryption filters before they reached his phone. "Yeah, Bob, it's me. What's going on? Are you okay?" "What?" The static flared up again, and if Copeland said anything more, Jack missed it. "Bob, did you hear me?" "Can't find my other shoe. Where the hell is my shoe?" Definitely drunk or even drugged, although Copeland had never struck Jack as a big fan of pharmaceuticals. "Listen to me, Bob. Tell me where you are. Are you at home?" More static. "Bob?" "Upstream, Jackie boy. Definitely upstream. Gotta get out of here. Gotta look after the twins." Jack had no idea what Copeland was talking about, but if he wasn't at home, he definitely shouldn't be driving. "Whatever you do," Jack told him, "don't get behind the wheel. You hear me? Leave your car where it is and call yourself a cab." "What?" "Call a cab, Bob. I mean it. Promise me you won't drive." "No driving," Copeland murmured, his voice sounding distant as if he'd lowered the phone. "Can't find my damn shoe." Jack was about to insist he let him pick him up when the line clicked and the phone went dead. Jack sighed. He knew Copeland and, anyway, you know how this one ends, don't you? Well, I wrote the Copeland character into the book because I am shocked that we live in a nation where a man so high up in the defense establishment who had been working on American cybersecurity could obviously be assassinated and his body unceremoniously thrown into a dumpster, and the media completely ignores the story. We are living in a banana republic. There are no journalists anymore. This story should have been pursued by 10 journalists, let alone 1,000. Savage.